I told him that Napier left nothing to chance, and had calculated time and distance and supply to a nicety, and set his pace accordingly. As to his route across what Theodore called the Salt Plain, it was the shortest way to Magdala. I weighed every word, you may be sure, for I knew that however amiable he might be just now, the least little thing could turn him into a murderous maniac. I had to force myself to remember that, in the face of his smiles and cheery chat, but 'twasn't easy. Here he was, in his harlequin coat and glittering pants, sitting at ease on a gun carriage, laughing and sipping tej, all geniality as he turned the talk to every topic under the sun, the range of our rifles and our courts martial, and did the Queen ever review her troops, and my opinion of the Prussian needle gun, and the probable cost of his boy's education at an English school, and what difficulties he might face being black and foreign, and was it likely, did he think, that he'd take up with an English girl? It was all so pleasant and normal, hang it, that I wondered, was it possible that this portended a peaceful outcome? In effect, a surrender? I daren't hope. With this demented bugger there was no knowing. And as he talked, his army was falling in on the great plain of Islamgi, rank upon rank, spearmen and swordsmen and riflemen and cavalry by the thousand, white-robed fighters with their banners before them, churning up the dust in rolling clouds, through which appeared presently the Magdala prisoners, plodding wearily to the tent lines. The Europeans were in the van, and a sorry lot they were, like tramps on the lookout for a hen roost. If you'd seen them at your gate, you'd have set the dog on them. There were a dozen or so of them, all strangers to me, of course, but I guessed that the two in red coats must be Prido of the Bombay Army and Cameron, the consul whose imprisonment had started the whole row. Prido was your complete subaltern, tall, fairish, with moustache and whiskers. Cameron was burly and black-bearded, and had a crutch under one arm. They, and one or two of the others, walked in the oddest way, lifting their feet high at every step, as though treading through mud or heather. That, I discovered, is what wearing heavy irons for months on end does to you. They'd been relieved of them only a few days ago. Leading the group was a chipper little Dago with a bristling head of hair and soup strainer to match, and at his elbow a hulking fellow who was all beard and pouched eyes. They were Rassam and Blanc, and they were the fellows who, with Prido, had carried the first request for Cameron's release to Theodore 2 years ago, and been promptly jailed themselves. Who the others in the group were, I don't know, and it don't matter, for these four were the ones singled out by Theodore for introduction to me. He hailed Rassam effusively, with his usual inquiries about health and happiness, and had he slept well, and then took them aback by announcing me with a fine flourish, for of course they all knew me by name and fame, and shook my hand in turn with varying degrees of enthusiasm, which I found mighty interesting. Rassam didn't like me, or rather, he didn't like my presence. You see, he'd been the leader of the pack, on account of being in some sort of political job in Aden, and was their spokesman with Theodore, with whom he was very thick. I don't say he toadied, and I'd not blame him if he had with a creature like Theodore, but he was at pains to be busy, very much the Emperor's confidant, and I guess he feared being cut out by the celebrated Flashy. If that seems odd, well, captivity breeds strange germs in people's minds, rivalries and enmities flourish, and little things wax great. Of course, he was some kind of Levantine Turk or Bedouin Chichi, so you'd not have expected him to behave like the British prisoners. Prido was the youngest, 30-ish or thereabouts, cool as a trout, with an affected lazy look, which I guessed concealed a sharp mind and a deal of hard bark. From the way he glanced towards Theodore, I knew that captivity hadn't cracked him. Nor had it done anything to Cameron's spirit, although it had played havoc with his body. He'd been racked and flogged even worse than the rest, and was a sick man. But he had that dogged, quiet manner which is generally admired, especially by devout Christians. Not my style, but useful in companions in misfortune. Blanc was a sawbones in the Bombay Medical Reserve, grave and tough and respected by the chief men on the Amber for his skill in doctoring them and their families. Rassam, as I say, wasn't glad to see me. Prido was, and showed it. Blanc was, but didn't, for demonstration wasn't his style. Cameron was too used up to do more than acknowledge me, and of course all four wondered what my arrival portended, what news did I have of Napier's progress, and what, above all, was Theodore about to do. That last remained a mystery. He sat the five of us down before his tent and started gassing about everything under the sun, how his fancy dress was made of French silk, how he had had to rebuke Damash for belittling our army, and then a great harangue about a rifle that someone had stolen from the king's